To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for a sermon most grand, as today we will be speaking of the Golden Wardens of Terror, the undying companions of the Emperor, and the most perfect of all his creations. These beings go by many names, sometimes being referred to as the 10,000, as the Watchers of the Throne, or even as the Golden Legion, though in truth they are the demigods of the Adeptus Custodes. Though their number may be few, and though they may appear to be rather insignificant when compared to the scale of nightmarish horror amidst our galaxy, just know that they have been forged to embody the very pinnacle of humanity's great potential. No weapon may truly match their masterful skill. No mind can ever grasp their unwavering discipline, and no foe will ever hope to endure their wrath, for they are the guardians of the Master of Mankind, and he crafted them himself to serve as both his counsel and spear. Yet, we must not be deceived by their golden splendor, for in truth, the Custodian Guard have existed as little more than myth for the past 10,000 years. Though indeed, they played a pivotal role in the Imperium's early history, we must admit to ourselves that that time has long since passed. Ever since the days of the Horus Heresy, where they ultimately failed to protect their master, they have remained secluded within the Imperial Palace, guarding the broken and decayed remains of the Emperor, almost as a form of penance. But in recent years, with the galaxy cleaved in twain by chaos, their faction has suddenly emerged from the shadows, and now stand as an unstoppable force, bringing the true will of the Emperor to every misbegotten world in the blasted Imperium. They answer only to the Emperor himself, with some saying that their operations are all performed in accordance with his ancient mission of uplifting mankind to seize total dominion over the stars. But regardless, they know every secret of terror, and their long period of isolation has only been spent in training, where the 10,000 have honed themselves into the sharpest of the Imperium's spears. Each one is the equivalent to an insurmountable army, capable of conquering a world by brutal force if needed, with there being countless tales of aliens and heretics falling in droves beneath the gleaming aura might of a wrathful guard. For today, however, we shall be investigating every facet of their faction, starting with the history of the 10,000, exploring their shrouded origins through to their seclusion within the Imperial Palace and of their eventual re-emergence at the end of the 41st millennium. We will then go over the purpose of their role, of how their kind are recruited and created, of their traditional orders, before finishing our sermon by looking at how their faction has changed since reappearing within the galactic scene. But in any event, we have spoken enough. And so, my dearest friends, I do believe that it is now time for us to begin. Today we must delve into the deepest reaches of the Imperial Palace, a place truly forbidden to all. Yet it is the best place for us to learn of the dark secrets of the Custodian Guard. Before we speak of their present duties, or of the majesty they bring in battle, it is first necessary to trace the long history of the Custodian Guard. For in their tale lies the key to understanding their power, both physical and symbolic. This saga begins long before the time of Space Marines, Primarchs, and even of the Imperium itself, as we must instead look back to the shadowy days where the Emperor himself walked openly upon old Terra. None can be exactly sure of when the Golden Legion first joined their master, as in the Imperium's oldest and most precious records, every account of the Emperor describes him as being flanked by his auric guard. Still, It is thought that there are ancient hieroglyphic etchings and fragmented pieces of Terran parchment which spell out how they came into existence. Yet that is knowledge that none within the Imperium will ever be privy to learn. Regardless, during this ancient age, the Emperor arose upon Terra during a time where it was ruled by petty techno-barbarian warlords, each waging their own campaigns in a pursuit to hold but a mote of power over that blasted wasteland. Yet he had already formulated his grand plan for humanity to ascend as the rightful masters of the galaxy, and the first step would naturally involve the unification of Terra under his own glorious word. He could not do this alone, however, and so he envisaged a troop of genetically enhanced companions who could serve the dual purposes of defending him from the inevitable danger, as well as to confer with him on matters of galactic strategy. Thus, he turned his genius to the field of genetomantic lore and devised the fabled methods for enhancing a mere human into a demigod. Each was to be fashioned as an individual project through a process so painstaking and so complex that no two could ever be the same. This differs greatly to the later design of the Space Marines, but whereas the Astartes were to serve as amassed legions, his companions were to be singular beings, each one a masterpiece of genetic artistry, psycho-alchemy, and ceaseless training. In some ways, the methods could be compared to those needed for the creation of the Primarchs. Though, as we all know, his sons were eventually fashioned using secrets harnessed from the warp, whereas his companions would arguably remain as pure. When the Unification Wars ravaged Old Terra, the vast majority of the fighting was carried out by the Thunder Warriors, who were the crude progenitor to the Space Marines, as the Emperor did not wish to risk the lives of his precious companions unless it was seen as absolutely necessary. Rather sadly, once Terra had been united, the Emperor no longer saw any use in maintaining the unstable Thunder Warriors, and so he cast them away, wiping the slate clean for humanity's next stage. It fell to the Custodian Guard to carry out this purge, exterminating near every warrior, save for a scant few who would eventually fall over the coming millennia. During the Great Crusade, their role was never to command any armies or to conquer worlds, as that task fell to the myriad legions of the Astartes. Instead, the Custodians remained close to the Emperor as an inner circle, serving as a group who could speak with him on a closer basis than of even his Primarch sons. Still, they were sometimes dispatched to carry out shadowy missions with the crusading fleet, or to act as envoys to distant worlds. Yet these tasks were never for very long, as their primary mission was always and would always be to safeguard the Emperor's life. Unfortunately, this then brings us to the dark days of the Horus Heresy, where the War Master was swayed by the dark temptations of chaos and sought to bring about the downfall of the mighty Imperium. The Custodians fought bravely alongside the Emperor within the Imperial Webway after it had been accidentally shattered by Magnus, leading to a demonic incursion within the very heart of the Imperial Palace. Most tragically, during the climactic hours of the Heresy, where the Emperor had teleported aboard the Vengeful Spirit to face Horus, the dark powers of Chaos had seemingly corrupted several of his companions, forcing him to cut down dozens of those who were created to protect him. To be clear, however, the Custodians were never truly swayed to the side of the War Master, and rather, the concentrated energies of the warp had temporarily broken their minds, thus leading to this dark and most shameful event. Yet, as we all know, the Emperor was mortally wounded by Horus, forcing him to be interned upon the Golden Throne, a seat which, by all accounts, he will never leave. The custodians, therefore, were left with the bitter knowledge that they had failed to protect their master, and that in his hour of need, that they were unable to perform the one duty that they had been created to perform. In the grim millennia that followed, they withdrew entirely from the wider galaxy, sealing themselves away behind the gates of the Imperial Palace, vanishing into total seclusion. For thousands of years thereafter, the custodians remained by the throne, some standing in total silence for an eternal vigil, never moving, never speaking, only remaining as his watchful guardians. In this age, their deeds and very existence fell into the realm of myth. But it would not be until the closing of the 41st millennium that their seclusion was finally broken, and where the 10,000 emerged once more, carrying their spears beyond the throne world, as a living reminder that the Emperor's might had not entirely faded. If one were to ask what task the custodian guard fulfills, the simplest answer would be that they are the guardians of the Emperor. Yet such a description, though true, falls woefully short of capturing the enormity of their charge. Their duty is not to serve as silent sentries upon a wall, nor of soldiers forgotten within a fortress, but as something far deeper, as they hold a sacred bond with the Emperor, unique amongst his myriad followers. From the very beginning, the custodians were never intended to be simple bodyguards. They were fashioned to be confidants and advisors, companions who could walk at the Emperor's side as equals in conversation, if never in stature nor position. Their intellects were honed to perceive not only the thrust of a spear, but the reason behind its strike, and not only the arts of war, but of the deeper meanings behind why a war must be waged, fought, and won. There were very few humans who the Emperor implicitly trusted, but the custodians had been elevated to the pinnacle of human potential, perhaps only so that they could bear witness to the Emperor's plan and fully comprehend it. But that time has long since passed. With the Emperor upon the throne, the custodians were robbed of the very role they had been created to serve. They no longer converse with nor hear of their master's plans, and instead, all they can do is to kneel before his unmoving form, soaking in the eternal silence of his false life. It is something of a cruel irony to create such a skilled and trusted group who could arguably be tasked with leading the Imperium as the Emperor's council, only to relegate them to what amounts to an almost ceremonial position, watching as the Imperium festers and crumbles around them. Their modern duties, however, all serve their final remaining task of watching over the Emperor's sanctum. One of their most notable and interesting of practices will be of their so-called blood games. These are ritualized tests of infiltration and subterfuge, wherein the custodians attempt to breach the palace's defenses while their fellow companions hunt them down. These contests are no mere training exercises, but necessary trials to ensure that no enemy, however cunning or skillful, might ever hope to reach the Golden Throne. It is said that more than once, traitors, assassins, or unscrupulous aliens have tried to infiltrate the palace, only to be cut down by the custodians who had already predicted their path, for they themselves had tested it in ages past. Beyond the games, they have occasionally been tasked as the silent arbiters of imperial law. A custodian may walk into a noble's court, into the chamber of a planetary governor, or into the fortress monastery of an Astartes chapter, and with but a glance, silence every voice. None may speak out, for they are the mouthpieces of the Emperor's will, and to defy one is to defy him. Their judgments will always be merciless and absolutely final, though these missions will rarely be carried out, unless, of course, a powerful opponent seems to be readying for a move against the Emperor himself. But there are far darker tasks hidden behind their splendor. Deep within the palace, beneath vaults sealed long before the Imperium first took form, we will find the sprawling dungeons of the Dark Cells. There lies the most unspeakable of horrors, some collected from the dark age of technology, which each hold the potential of scouring humanity from the face of the galaxy, should they ever be cursed to break free. Corrupted relics, undying prisoners, fragments of forbidden technology, and even the ensnared souls of demons who once dared to breach the throne world, they all remain here, locked away until the end of time. They are watched eternally by the Shadow Keepers, a brotherhood within the Custodian Guard whose task is to ensure that no nightmare is ever able to escape from its bonds, and whose days are spent basked in the half-light of evils that could unravel the Emperor's grand design. In addition to safeguarding the palace, the duties of the Custodian Guard also extends to include the entirety of the Sol system, since if an enemy were to move against the Emperor, they would first need to breach the mighty defenses of mankind's solar bastion. Thousands of Imperial vessels traverse the system's stellar lanes each day, with each posing a distinct risk of harboring aliens, mutants, or heretics within their hull. Yet those individuals would have no idea that the Emperor's companions will monitor their journey from the moment they pass into the local system through to their eventual departure. This is done via a nebulous network of listening devices, covert servitors, and sanctioned psykers, ensuring that the 10,000 know of every single movement upon the throne world, long before it even takes place. It is quite interesting to now consider how strange their role truly is. They are unmatched in martial prowess, have been armed with the finest weapons mankind has ever produced, and have been trained to topple entire armies by themselves. Yet so much of their existence is spent in silence, pacing corridors and standing unmoving before sealed doors. The gulf between their purpose and their potential is nothing short of astounding. But to be clear, that even in this curtailed position, they are certainly not wasted. Their vigilance is indispensable, as the Emperor will always be in danger from the enemies of man, though it is truly tragic that their greater destiny, to serve as his trusted companions through a golden age, has most assuredly been denied. To speak of the Custodians is to speak of perfection. Though it is a perfection so alien to the common soul of man that it inspires not a trace of admiration nor confidence, only a terrible sense of unease. They are demigods, closer to Primarchs than that of even a space marine, and in fact, so enhanced is their nature that they are likely as distant to an Astartes as a marine is to a guardsman. Each of their rank is a work of singular artistry, having been sculpted over the course of a lifetime to join in what is perhaps the most prestigious order of the entire Imperium. Many people will presume them to be similar to the Marines, only slightly stronger or better equipped. But in reality, when we zoom in and observe their creation, we will see that these two classes of super soldier share very little with one another. The methods needed to produce a Custodian Guard were first discovered by the Emperor as a relic from the Dark Age of Technology. And as far as we have discovered, the process has remained unchanged into the 42nd millennium. To begin with, the first companions were said to have been recruited from the children of influential noble families upon Old Terra, and this practice has been followed for every single custodian up to this very day. But in any case, it is a great honor for a noble to have their child chosen as a prospective companion. And so it is rather common for the Terran nobility to send an overabundance of their young to the Imperial Palace without caring if they even survive. After all, they can always create more. But the honor of the Emperor, that is a gift which can only be graced but once in a lifetime. The chosen recruits, though scarcely infants by this point, must still be screened for the strength to endure the total transformation of their very being, as the investment it takes to produce but a single companion is truly incomparable. It is vitally important to note here that for a recruit to be converted into a custodian, that they must be entirely reconstructed at a genetic level, and so any traits or characteristics from their old life will be seen as irrelevant and will only be overwritten. Though the Emperor once forged his companions by hand, this is obviously now impossible, and so it falls to a shadowy sect of the most skilled chirurgeons and bioalchemists to carry out the sacred task. Quite interestingly, the process is entirely distinct from the method to produce a space marine, as they will not be implanted with a gene seed or any nascent organs, and rather, the genetic and cellular tailoring will bring about the transformation as a slow yet truly remarkable process. Some have said that the soul of the recruit will undergo a similar change at this point, though we have no real way of knowing if this is true or just another part of the Emperor's myth. In any event, as they grow and develop into a warrior, their entire life will become devoted to training, as each custodian guard must be defined by their indefatigable discipline above all else. They will undergo forbidden psycho-indoctrinations to eternally bind their will to that of serving the Emperor, as this loyalty must never be questioned, and it must stand fast in the face of every test, no matter how dark nor painful. As a rather strange fact, the companion in training will become a master of many unexpected fields, including history, statecraft, philosophy, and even of artistry. The reason here is rooted in their old task of serving as the Emperor's trusted advisors, where they would be expected to converse with him as experts on any subject, no matter how esoteric. Of course, such skills are entirely superfluous now, yet they are still useful for situations where the custodian must venture away from Terra in their pursuit of some sinister, yet undetectable threat. One of the final aspects of their training will be to absorb the legitimately forbidden truths of the Imperium, many of which are unknown to even the merciless lords of the Inquisition. They must acknowledge and truly understand that the Imperium is a broken and ruined husk of an empire, and that it only sinks deeper into the cosmic mire with each passing year. Similarly, they will be forced to learn of the extent to which mankind has strayed from the Emperor's original plan, and that much of this is due to the misguided leadership of the High Lords, and of the constant fear and paranoia rife in the Imperial bureaucracy. It can be quite difficult to wrestle with such facts, as at the end of it, they must swear to defend humanity, despite knowing that the Emperor would be ashamed and most assuredly disappointed with what mankind has squandered over the years. Very few will survive the ordeal of their mental and physical transformation, yet perhaps this is all for good reason. No one is entirely sure of the total strength of the custodian guard, but they tend to refer to themselves as the 10,000, as they do not believe that there will ever be sufficient worthy recruits to exceed that count. In the end, once remade, the newborn companion will hold no relation to their old family, yet this matters not, as their entire life will now be entirely devoted to safeguarding the Emperor from the myriad dangers of the galaxy. They will no longer age as a mortal, remaining almost perpetually frozen in that state of perfection, always watching over their master, always waiting as his shadow cast over the cold remnants of his dream. Though united as the 10,000, it should be clear by now that the Custodian Guard are not an indistinct force made up of interchangeable fodder. They need no commanders nor commissars to drill orders or directives into their minds, as they are all entirely united in their purpose of serving the Emperor, and they know exactly how to carry out their task without second thought. Generally, the Custodians will assign as many of their kind to any given deployment as they deem necessary, never risking too many at once, yet never leaving their kin under-equipped for a coming war. Even the largest of conflicts will scarcely see more than a few dozen companions on the field, but in truth, even just one of their rank will likely be enough to shift the tides of battle. They can be deployed nearly anywhere for an indefinite period, with the knowledge that they will be able to endure whatever is thrown at them before responding with the deadly and uncompromising wrath of the Emperor. Still, even with this decentralized system, there are a number of unique brotherhoods, fraternities, and orders which a companion may join. These are in no way akin to the companies of a Space Marine chapter, as these are primarily a cultural tradition, having been passed down over the long years since their first creation. Generally speaking, every companion will belong to at least one of these groups, with some being selected as a point of honor, some out of martial pride, and others because they seek to hone a specific aspect of their unique skill set. The Hykanatoi Order is one of the warrior castes, representing the martial strength of their faction, often being represented by small groups of heavily armored, spear-wielding guard. This order contains two further subgroups, the first of which is the Sentinel Guard, who are tasked with forming mobile bulwarks during a battle, and as such, must carry ancient Presidium shields. The latter, however, would be of the Heteron Guard, who were each hand-chosen to serve as the personal bodyguards to the Emperor during the Great Crusade. In the wake of their failure during the heresy, the survivors of this order swore to never leave the Emperor's side. And so, ever since that day, they have remained by the Golden Throne, slowly exhausting themselves beneath the psychic presence of their master. Those who chose to join the Order of the Ephoroi would take on a more subtle role in the art of war. They would specialize in covert operations, infiltrating hostile sectors, amassing troves of intelligence from the darkest of foes, all of which would serve to direct the companions towards those who sought to bring about the downfall of the Imperium. Quite interestingly, though the Custodians are seen to be perfected beings, there will always come a time where one is unable to perform their duties and must decide whether to die in some glorious battle or to set down their armor and step away from the throne. Still, even if physically incapable, the Custodians were trained to the pinnacle of what an enhanced human may achieve, and so they still possess a great many skills which may support the Emperor's mission. As such, if a companion must retire, then they may join the sect known as the Eyes of the Emperor, where they will forever wander the galaxy, traveling in secret to locate possible threats levied against Holy Terror. In any event, should a target be located, either by one of these retirees or some other source, then the Custodes will form what is known as a Shield Company, which is a general grouping of companions led by a Shield Captain. This role is sometimes seen of as ceremonial, as each companion is fully capable of leading a force by themselves. But nonetheless, they are veterans who have proven themselves through countless battles, and as such, they will draft out the overarching strategy for a coming campaign. The captain may draw from the entirety of the 10,000 to see the mission accomplished, though, as I mentioned, they will typically only call for the minimum required force so as to not risk overextending or losing any of their kin. In the rarest of circumstances, several shield companies will be assembled into a shield host, which in total could contain upwards of 100 companions. Though I must stress that this will only be called upon to counter a dire threat which appears to endanger Terra itself. The numerous shield captains of each shield company will form a council to direct the host, pooling their vast knowledge together to ascertain the appropriate response towards the terrible foe. One such example of a shield host would be of the Solar Furies, which comprised of 5 companies who were assembled to seal off a newly awakened tomb world, found unnervingly close to Terra. Of course, when the threat was extinguished, the shield host was dissolved, as we must keep in mind that these are temporary formations and are not strictly bound, like with the companies of a common Astartes chapter. With that said, there are several groupings who have never been disbanded, as their task remains eternal, and they can never be safely relieved from duty. This includes the Shadow Keepers, who watch over the dreadful vaults below the Imperial Palace, and of the Aquilan Shield, who follow the words of psychic doomscriers, issuing them with important individuals to escort and defend. For 10,000 years, the Custodian Guard were forced to stand apart from the Imperium, being bound to their endless vigil within the Imperial Palace. Though yes, there were some rare excursions performed to ensure the safety of Terra or to gather intelligence from the wayward stars, but the vast majority of the companions were confined to simply wait and watch over the fading body of the Emperor. While the Space Marines, Sisters of Battle, and Imperial Guard shed oceans of blood across many a nameless world, the 10,000 remained cloistered, their duties being confined to the palace and its dreadful sanctums. Over time, they fell into the realm of myth, with very few, aside from the most senior of Imperial lords, truly knowing that they still served upon Terra. They were as distant and as unreal as the Emperor himself. But as the 41st millennium came to its waning days, and as the Imperium teetered upon the brink of collapse, it seemed as though even the custodians could not remain sequestered. The rise of Abaddon's 13th Black Crusade, the shattering of Cadia, and the sundering of the galaxy by the Great Rift all paled in comparison to the horrors emerging within the birthplace of all mankind. Holy Terra itself was beset upon by a demonic incursion headed by 8 bloodthirsters leading their 88 cohorts of Khorne. In response, the companions rode out from the palace, gripped by the shame of having allowed for an attack upon the throne world, though in the end they were ultimately successful in driving off the demonic attack. Over 2,000 of their number had fallen to the Neverborn, a terrible figure, and one which suggested that their long millennia of isolation had only led to the calcification of their abilities, and that perhaps they were no longer as sharp as they once believed. In response, Captain General Trajan Valoris, leader of the Companions, declared that the Custodians would no longer be bound to Terra, and that now they would set out into the stars and bring the wrath of the Emperor directly to his many foes. Of course, this was quite a shock to the wider Imperium, especially to those who scarcely believed in their existence. Most humans would be utterly dumbfounded at the sight of a space marine standing around 2.5 meters in height. Yet they themselves would be towered over by a custodian guard, wreathed in the psychic aura of the Emperor himself. Yet it became increasingly common for the Imperial forces of many a war zone to catch a distant glint of that glorious golden armor, gliding through the battle like an eagle, effortlessly diving through a storm. This reverential and almost mythic idea of the custodian guard extended through the imperial ranks, so much so that the administratum scribes were forbidden from ever recording them as having suffered a loss, as they were too afraid it would be seen as a dark stain against the emperor himself. Nevertheless, in the immediate wake of the demonic siege of terror, dozens of worlds that had not seen custodians since the days of the Great Crusade suddenly found themselves graced by the Golden Legion, striding out from the darkness of the void. Against the forces of the warp, where regular armies faltered, the 10,000 would appear as beacons of hope, their Auramite armor blazing through the night, striking with the wrath of a god, annihilating the fell legions that had once seemed invincible. And yet, their return to the galaxy was not only for war. The Aquilan Shield expanded its reach, dispatching custodians to guard those whose fates were pivotal to the Imperium's survival. High Lords found golden giants suddenly present at their councils, their silent judgment suffocating every whispered intrigue, maintaining absolute loyalty before mysteriously disappearing, content to trust in the prognostications of the doomscriers. The Solar Watch also surged forth, their host once responsible for defending only the Sol system, though now emboldened by the dangers of the coming age, forcing them to push outwards and to bring a dozen nearby systems under their watch. Valoris himself has emerged as perhaps the most competent and effective leader that could be required for such a prodigious expansion. Terra has never been more secure, the companions never more able in their ability, and the custodians now know more of the galaxy's secrets than ever before. But where many of their kind have rushed off to defend the Imperium's battered worlds, some of their kind will always remain upon Terra. There are only so many custodians who can set out into the galaxy, and with each year some will inevitably fall in battle, forcing more to be recalled from Terra and slowly reducing those who were sworn to give their lives in the defense of the Emperor. Each custodian sent beyond the palace has been a treasure, put at risk to stave off what may very well be the inevitable destruction of the Imperium, but their absence from the throne world only leaves it more vulnerable than ever before. Their presence in the wider Imperium has been a light against the dark, but it has also been a gamble, for their true duty to protect the Emperor himself can never be abandoned. From their first creation during the dark days before the Imperium first took root, we have to wonder if the Emperor ever considered that his grand plan would fail, and if it did, then what role would have fallen to his custodian guard? Maybe he foresaw their failure during the heresy and knew that they would remain as watchers over his throne. But I cannot believe that his defeat was planned, given that it led to the wretched and deplorable state of the Imperium today. Instead, perhaps his duel with Horus was simply the fatal end to his mission for all of mankind, thus leaving his custodians to be aimless in a doomed world. They were to be his companions, his aides, his bodyguards, his confidants. Yet now they are simply watchers to the throne and guardians to a master who no longer speaks. They are the embodiment of human perfection, bound to a broken husk and to an Imperium which each day drifts a little farther from his idea of perfect. Their presence inspires awe, but also so much unease. For though they are the mightiest of the Emperor's creations, they are indeed a reminder that the best parts of the Imperium are all relics from a bygone time, and that nothing will ever again come close to our old golden age. Think of what could be achieved if the Custodian Guard had been placed at the head of the Imperium after the Emperor's internment on the throne, of how they could have maintained his true dreams for humanity as a council utterly unified in servitude. But instead, they shrank away into the palace and busied themselves for 10,000 years, while all of mankind decayed around them. Their reappearance within the galactic scene will likely end up benefiting the wider Imperium, but appearing now, only when the galaxy was literally split in two, feels like the dying grasp of an empire, long overdue for falling, once and for all. But with this, my dearest friends, we have now come to our end. Thank you all so much for listening to this investigation into the Custodian Guard in its entirety, and I do hope that you enjoyed our sermon. But as has become our habit, I must close this chapter once more, and so until we meet again, I will wish each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.